We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Welcome to Snacky Tunes. I am one half your host, DJ Never Forget. Terry Diabolic is down in Austin editing the TV show that he shot, which I can't remember how much I'm allowed to say, but, you know, he's down there. Shout him out. He took the dog down. Welcome to Snacky Tunes, episode 91, which is kind of amazing to me. Very excited. That was just Computer Magic, who is running a little late, but on her way and will be playing live today. But to start the show off, we have beer expert aficionado hip. What do you want to say?
Beer expert. Yeah, but calling yourself an expert's kind
well
of,
I you didn't
okay.
I did
well then
and
beer expert
is,
then
and nowhere in the press release is it in there, so I claimed it. Josh Bernstein, welcome to Snacky Tunes.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here today.
So big day, your book comes out tomorrow.
Yeah,
which we're going to get to a little bit later in the show, but why don't you give the listeners a little bit of a background on who you are and what makes you such a expert aficionado?
Okay, where? How far back you want me to stretch?
You pick a point. We're loose like that.
Okay, well, let's see. I kind of came to New York City 11 years ago with no real plans to be a writer. My friend was just kind of like, I've got a free bedroom. And my only alternative was going back and sleeping with in my brother's bunk bed. And so to me, that was not really an appealing option. And then, you know, over the last... 10 years, I've kind of been hunting and pecking in a way in the media world. I started off, I got a column in the New York Press, I think, back in 2004, writing about food and drink. And that led to writing about bars and restaurants for New York Magazine, Time Out in New York. And then after a while, the thing about being in journalism is that you can only be a generalist so much and you don't really get called on. So I tried to think, what do I really care about? I loved bars and I loved the beer in the bars. And so I started focusing a bit more on the beer, and it just took off. It was like my interest, and it kind of dovetailed with the rise of American craft brewing.
So when you started writing, I had a buddy in college. We were talking about Oregon, and he just one day was like, I'm rating beers. Every beer I drink, I'm going to create my own rating system. Uh-huh. And it was intense. But I thought about him when you were coming on the show, and I was like, you know, that's how it starts, just like a passion that grows into it. So when you started, were you just drinking, or did you like start writing about it, or how did it grow into like what, you know, to the fact that you have a book coming out about it?
I think it is. I mean, you start drinking it, but like a lot of people that grew up in the Midwest, I started off drinking the really terrible beer, the stuff that was 24 or 30 packs, things I could slide down a beer bong in a heartbeat.
You know, I don't think they have cubes out here, but no? when I slept
such
and lived
shame.
In Oregon, it was like Milwaukee Beast cubes at the store, which is a 30 rack.
Yeah, it was.
The shape of a cube.
When I was in college, it was, I think, the preferred drink was natural ice.
Ice?
Yeah, which was a bit more potent than a natural light, which I think was like $8.99 for a 30-pack.
It was something like that.
So when you're that age, I mean, it's really about quantity over quality. And then when I got to New York, you know, I start going to all these bars, and then there's only so many $3 gin and tonics you can drink in dive bars after a while. So I started looking to some of the other offerings on tap. You know, you start out drinking Brooklyn, then you realize that there's all these other great beers being brought into the city. And then, I mean, it just kind of took off from there. And the older I got, the less I wanted to stay out till bars till 5 a.m.
Right. So you can then like buy a few nice beers, mm-hmm. that are a little bit more crafted and probably spend the same amount of money and not.
Exactly. Something you're going to enjoy. You're not really looking to choke it all down. I mean, I went to far too many open bars when I was younger, and that was and open bars are great, don't get me wrong, but there's a certain pleasure being able to drink a beer you want to drink instead of trying to queue up behind 50 or 100 people to try to get this beer you don't even want anyway just because it's free.
I would agree. So why is this like the best time in America to be a beer drinker these days? Like what's changed?
Well, what's changed, you know, in the last 30 years, we've seen the bigger change in the way people are drinking beer than any time since Prohibition, in my opinion. What we've been seeing is it's kind of this quintessential David versus Goliath story where everyone knows about Bud, Miller, Coors. But what's been happening is there's all these people that are like, you know what? I don't want to taste or drink a beer that tastes just like everything else. And people have been going out and really, you know, they've been letting their creativity really guide them in what they want to do. And they're not taking no for an answer. And they're just putting it out there. And luckily, bit by bit by bit, people are really, they're cottoning to these flavors.
And, you know, how is it? I mean, how are people getting used to it? I mean, obviously, like, when I think of those beers, I think of, like, it's kind of bitter and mm-hmm. watery. And, you know, how have the boundaries been pushed as far as, like, taste and, you know, more flavors within the beers that are coming out?
Well, I think we were talking about the bitterness. I mean, that's really, like, IPAs, which is usually a stronger, really nicely bitter beer with a little bit of sweetness. That's a beer that when people drink it, it's really such a 180 from the beer they're used to drinking that mm-hmm. it just kind of shocks people out of what they've been having for a while. And so what I've seen is people get really into IPAs and bigger IPAs, and they just want more flavor, more everything. And so when you get into IPAs, it kind of leads to really imperial stouts, which are really strong, supercharged stouts, which leads to barley wines, which are real nice, sweet, strong beers that are suited for wintertime. But after a while, you can't really drink so many of these beers, which tend to rival wine for alcohol percent. So you start looking to some of the other flavors, like maybe instead of drinking a supercharged one as strong as wine, you look to something that's maybe been aged in wine barrels or bourbon barrels. And so it's just, there's not really a limit for flavors. It's more about imagination. I was just out in Denver for the Great American Beer Fest, which it's the biggest beer festival in America, but people bring their weird, wild, crazy stuff. There was a brewery there from Michigan, which had a smoked porter, but it was made with smoked mangalitsa pig heads in there, which you think and you read that and you're like, that's going to be the worst thing in the world. And then,
I mean, it sounds awful.
It sounds terrible, doesn't it? Right. It sounds like a bad dare. But you try it and you're like, you shut your eyes and it's got a little bit of smokiness, a little complexity. You're like, this would be the best beer to have with barbecue. Or maybe from the rest of the pig's body.
Right. So let's go back to aging in barrels, because obviously that's what you do for whiskeys and bourbons and different things like that. But this is an old tradition for beer. So it's like, how is it being brought back? What types of beers are using it?
Well, you're right. I mean, before stainless steel came about, all beers were kind of aged in wood barrels by default. And so what we're seeing now is that they're taking, well, you mentioned the whiskey barrels or rum barrels or bourbon barrels, and they're taking, you know, there's usually they're going to go for stronger beers because those are really potent flavors that will tend to overwhelm, we'll say, like a lager or a pilsner, which will just get completely like washed over by that. So they're looking to, you know, dark stouts or barley wines or even a really nice strong double IPA, things that can stand up to a bit more complexity and stand to more flavors. But I mean, it's just the barrels don't so much transform the beer's whole cloth. They really accentuate flavors. And if there's, you know, flavors of chocolate in the stout, like mixing with bourbon, I mean, that's a pretty darn good.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So how does that differ from, you know, the current rise or almost cult-like status of cask ales?
Different from cask ales are, I mean, the beers I'm talking about basically are ones that have already, cask ales, if the listener doesn't know, it's basically a live beer. Most beers are, let me backtrack, try to explain this. Most beers are force carbonated, which means that the carbonation is added to them in there. And what a cask ale is it's a beer that keeps its yeast in there and it's allowed to evolve over time and it's not filtered. And so the bubbles you're going to get in there are much softer and it's served about 50 to 55 degrees. And so it's a bit warmer, so you get a lot more of the nuances coming out of it.
I mean, I've had a couple, because I remember when it became very big in New York, like a few years ago, I went to a bar, and I was like, I'm cask ale, and then I tried, and I was like, I'm not quite sure that this is for, it's a very particular taste.
You know, my wife hates cask ales.
Which,
they are a little bit warmer. People like their beer cold, and I mean, it's just, it's a classic way of doing it, but it's just, it doesn't have that zing, which people really like, that carbonated zip on their taste buds.
So let's say that you are new, freshly out of college, possible first job, little extra money in your pocket, and you're like, I'm going to get into my beer game. Where do you start? Like, what do you recommend?
You know what I do for people is I ask them like what flavors they like, because I think if you tell people what they're drinking is crap, the initial reaction is that it's going to be contrarian. They're going to be people going to get defensive, like, it's not crap. I like drinking that. You can't tell me that. So like if someone says, for example, I like a Stella Artois, and I'm just like, great. So you like something that's light, crisp, easy to drink. So I'd tell them in New York City, look to something like a Kelso Pilsner, which has a lot of those same similar qualities. And it's got a little bit, it's just like those qualities, but accentuated just a little bit more. Or maybe a Victory Prima Pils. So I try to play the flavor card and less of just drink this.
So I'm a huge Hefeweizen wheat beer, orange flavor. What would you recommend for me?
Oh,
if I like Blue Moon, I would probably like...
Oh, you'd love Allagash White from Portland, Maine.
Which I do. That is actually really correct.
It's that, but that Allagash White is one of my favorite wheat beers out there.
I feel good. So let's take a pause. We're going to play a song, and then we're going to talk about Brood Awakening and your book and your first real novel.
First one. My parents are very proud.
I mean, aren't they? Wait, have any reviews come out yet?
Yeah, you know, we're getting early reviews, and so they've been positive so far.
I mean, that's really what it is for parents. You can work in obscurity, but as soon as it comes out in the Times of New Yorker, you're just like,
yeah,
easy sailing.
They forget all those high school transgressions.
Yes. So we have a new track from Devin Thurot, and I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing his last name, but he is recently signed to French Kiss Records, and very excited to play a track from him. And then we're going to get Computer Magic all in here and loaded up, and we will continue on with our food guest, Josh. Yeah, just let that fade out. It's worth it. Hold for it. There we go. Welcome back to Snacky Tunes. I have Josh. Oh, I keep calling you Josh, but Joshua is what you sent me.
You know, it's Joshua for when you're professional. There was a lot, when it started out as a writer, there was a lot of Josh Bernsteins in the world.
Really?
And then, in addition, I was working for Time Out in New York. There was also a Joshua D. Bernstein on staff there. So I was like, why aren't my paychecks coming? Because they were all getting sent to the other Josh Bernstein out there. Then there was a Josh Bernstein Explorer who had the big show on the... Do you remember that a couple years back? It was like the Jewish Indiana Jones.
No.
Well, you know, if you're a Josh Bernstein, remember another one. So then Joshua M., but Josh to friends and to you.
So we are joined by author Joshua M. Bernstein, whose book Brute Awakening comes out tomorrow.
Yep.
As we say in our tradition, Mazel Tov.
Thank you.
Congratulations. So why don't you... L'chaim. Exactly. So why don't you tell us a little bit about the book?
Well... I've been a beer writer for the last 5 or 6 years, but what I am at heart is a journalist, and I really love the interplay of the two. And I think inside every beer is really a story of the creator and the producer behind the beer. And so with the book, I tried to touch base and be a profile writer and interviewer and talk about what drove people to create double IPAs and why they decided to put their life savings up and why they tried to put a brewery in the middle of nowhere, like what really drove them. And for this... A lot of beer books, to me, really talk a lot about the beer, but they don't talk a lot about the people into it. And so that was really my goal, was to talk about passion. And then, but the book really touches base on most of the what's been happening in modern craft brewing in America and around the world, why people have been doing the barrel aging, why cask ales are on the rise, why black IPAs are popping up, and what they mean. It's kind of a shortcut to what's been happening in craft brewing.
So it's an interesting thing about the like local movement that is obviously a result of. So how can these brewers have a certain finite type of growth that they can reach, and then that's all they can do to maintain the type of quality? Or do you think that you see some of these people being able to expand to a national level?
I mean, you look at someone like Sam Adams, for example. They hold about 1% of the U.S. market, yet everyone's like, Sam Adams is such a big brewer, but they're 1% of the market, which shows you that even the biggest, you know, quote unquote craft brewery in America is still pretty much small potatoes.
Wait, Sam, they're independent?
Well, yeah, I mean, they're
ish.
Yeah, independent ish. I mean, I can sell, you know, I think craft beer is less of a, I think it's less of something where everyone has to fit into a small box. I think if you're making great beer with care and quality, that's craft beer to me.
So they don't fall into the same category as like a Budweiser or
No, but you're seeing a lot of these people right now that are coming out with like Blue Moon, for example, is owned by Miller Coors, but just right. No one really knows that. And like Budweiser or whatever the Anheuser-Busch cartel now, they're putting out the Shock Top Wheat to try to really follow on the lines of a Blue Moon, which they're not really so clear that they're made by a big brewery, and people tend to just gloss it over.
Where does the line get drawn between like where does Sam Adams versus like how is Sam Adams not an Anheuser-Busch?
Well, you know that's really a tough question, because I think with with Sam Adams, I think there's still a face to this company, and there's still that, and it's I think it's the way they present themselves and the risks they take with their beer. Sam Adams still does really wild genre pushing beers out there, and they put them on the market, and because they have such great market saturation, you can go to your local supermarket and find them there. You can find like Imperial Stouts or Scotch Ales, where as a small craft brewery couldn't probably get on the shelves of, you know, a Safeway, but someone like Sam Adams can. I think the fact that they're there makes it easier and kind of paves the path for the other breweries to be there in the future.
So who are some of your favorite brewers in the country right now? I know you're going on a book tour, so who on the book tour are you excited to like dip in and have a drink?
Well, I'm starting off on the East Coast later this week. And then on Friday, I'm going to be in Boston with the people from Pretty Things. And Pretty Things, I wrote about them in the book, they're a gypsy brewery, whereas they don't own their own facility, and so they just rent space on the facility, and yet it's owned by a husband and wife, Dan and Martha, and they're this couple that they just have such a love for life and love for beer. They design the beers together, they brew together, and they make the labels together. They write limericks, poems, put up patches, or just kind of this epitome of a do-it-yourself movement.
They write poems?
They write poems about their beers.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you know the website off the top of your head?
I think maybe Pretty Things Beer Today.
That's kind of amazing.
And they put poems on the back of their label. So it's just, they try to wrap up the whole package with it, not just make it as simple, this is beer and you're going to taste this flavor. It's like you get to know their personality. And that's really what I think craft beer is about. It's personality and the people.
So one of the things that you suggested I asked, and I'm actually curious to, is like what your favorite beer slash first beer was, because I'm guessing it's not one and the same.
Oh God, the first beer, I think it does go back to the 30-pack. I think the 30-pack mentality, where it was, I'm pretty sure it was, actually the first drink I ever had, I remember this terribly, because it was a very, very, very bad night, where we took my parents' Chardonnay, I think I was 15, and then we mixed it with Ecto Cooler, which, I don't know if anyone remembers Gatorade had Ecto Cooler back
based
in the day.
Based off of Ghostbusters.
Yeah, so it was this Gatorade based off of Ghostbusters, which, I mean, it was just nuclear green, so we mixed it together, and then Gatorade's super sweet, and the wine's got its own sweetness too, but then we guzzled it down, and then... You know, I mean, the results were kind of predictable. And then
I can imagine
on that. But I think the first beer was probably a Busch Light, drank in the back of my parents' house while they were asleep. And I was trying to be very quiet while doing a beer bong, which is very tough.
And current favorite beer? Or you can give us top three. Or different categories, however you want to break it down.
Well, let's see. What do I have? We'll go back. What do I have to drink this weekend? I had there was a good one. There's a Firestone Walker, has a really great IPA that's just super fresh and like super citric and piney and just really easy to get down. And then Victory Prima Pils. Victory's a brewery from Pennsylvania, and their Pilsner is just about as little alcohol as Bud, but just you know, super crisp. It makes like a nice appetizer beer with cheese or with a pizza or anything like that. And then as far as a stout, because wintertime's kind of kicking in, Great Divide Yeti is a really amazing imperial stout, which, you know, it warms you up on those cold winter nights.
That's amazing. So finally, I just want to touch on the fact that you do tours in New York. What are they, breweries? Are they bars? What is the focus?
They're homebrew tours, whereas about, 3 years ago, I had a lot of friends who are homebrewers in the city. And the great thing about it is that it's such interesting novel beer that you're not going to be able to try anywhere else. And so I'd go to their houses, try the beer. And then people are like, oh, what did you do this week? And I'm like, oh, I tried my friend's beer. And people are like, how do I get to do that? And so over time, I started thinking about putting a tour together. And the people from New York City Craft Beer Week contacted me. And then I put together a tour of three different homebrewers' homes. And then we go in there, you meet them, and then you try all their beers. And so it's just a really, you know, New York City is a hard place to get to know people. It's hard to break down those walls. But New York City is also a city of voyeurs. So it really does all these things where you get to go in someone's house, look inside their bathroom, and drink their beer.
Right.
It's almost like a strange house party you're invited to. And so it was just going to be a one-off. And then when I got done with it, people were like, when's the next one? And I was like, what do you mean, when's the next one? And so I was like, I'll put together another one. Then it's kind of been going on for about 2.5 years now. And probably been to 4 of the 5 boroughs. Staten Island is have not made it there yet for homebrew tour. But met some great people. And it's really, it's weird. It's been a network and a community it's created, because people that want to be brewers go on the tour. But it's just people that want to go meet people that have the same passions as they do in a way. And people talk, become friends. And it's really amazing.
That's awesome. So why don't you give us the nuts and bolts where people can find the book, email you, get on one of these tours?
Nuts and bolts. The book is going to be everywhere across the country. It's going to be at any bookstore there. It's you can find me at joshuambernstein.com. That's J-O-S-H-U-A-M Bernstein, B-E-R-N-S-T-E-I-N.com. And then I have links on there to sign up for my tour, where I'm going to be appearing for the book tour, and then how you can buy the book.
Awesome. Well, the book is Brood Awakening. Josh, author. Yeah. Aficionado expert.
We're Josh now.
Josh. Yeah. Thank you for being on Snacky Tunes.
Right.
It was great having you here. We're going to cut you loose and send you off to one of your other many interviews for this.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much. We have Computer Magic here. They're going to finish setting up. We're going to play a couple songs from Purity Ring, and I can't remember who else I loaded up, but we'll get to in a second. And then we'll get some live music from Computer Magic. Yes, they're nodding. All right. Stay tuned. Hey.
your velvet bow, your Elvis song in my ear, that moonlit voice that I hear. Now we are old as bread. We walk along our golden crest. We hide away for a week. We only look and don't speak. Song in my ears, that moonlit voice that I hear.
All right, welcome back to Snacky Tunes. In studio we have Computer Magic. Welcome back. Just kidding.
Hello.
That was quite like the raise up like that. Well, welcome back. I think, Dan, this is your third time on this show.
Yeah.
Like, once before is Computer Magic when you were just really kind of starting out.
Yeah.
And then Space Base.
Then Space Base, yeah, with Max.
I wish I should have played Voyager. Because it's been a while since I heard that. But do the rest of you want to introduce yourselves, or are you guys just going to sit on headphones?
Whatever you want.
You can.
I'm Chris.
Chris plays drums and Computer Magic.
You can say hello.
Hi.
All right, fair enough.
I'm James.
Hey, James. So, Dan, so why don't you tell us what you've been up to in the last year or so since we've seen you?
Well, this year I'm kind of focusing on just writing music for an album and not putting songs online for free, because that's what I have been doing. So I kind of have 5 now that nobody has heard, and I'm trying to make it 10. And then once I have 10, I want to put out an album.
What are you doing for the songwriting process? How are you going about it at this time?
Right now, it's just kind of me in my room making songs.
Bedroom magic.
Bedroom magic.
Which is a whole other project.
But last month I went to London to work on songs with this guy Daniel, whose moniker is Tommy Sparks, and I wrote some songs with him, three songs. I don't know if I'll use them for the album, but just getting ideas from other people and trying out new things. So
why don't we hear a song?
Okay. Did anyone ever tell you?
All right. Computer magic. Sounds good.
Thanks.
Yeah. So I know that we've talked about this before, but hold on, I've got that spooky mic. It is Halloween on there. There we go. Talking, you know, we talked about something when I saw your last show about, and you mentioned before, about the transition from putting your music up online for free versus now keeping it close to your chest. And, you know, why do you feel like the transition is necessary as opposed to just continually releasing music so more people know about you?
Well, at first, I thought that if I didn't put my music online for free and nobody knew who I wasn't sure if anybody would want to buy music from a band that they'd never heard of. So I put it online for free, and now I realize that if I ever want to get signed and if I ever want to make money making music, then I can't really give everything away for free. But I don't know. I think it was the right thing to do, putting it up online for free at first. But I can't do it anymore, though.
I would agree. So as an artist who, you know, let's say that between now and whenever you write the 5 more songs, get a record deal, put it out, let's say it could be like a year to 2 years, how do you plan on keeping relevant, or what do you plan on doing in order just to keep your name out there besides just playing shows?
Well, I still want to put some music online for free. Just not all of it. So I'll probably put out a new song maybe every 3 months or something. I just can't put all of them up there. And it's really hard to do that, actually, when I'd been so used to instant, kind of the instant gratification of putting something up and seeing instant reactions from people to give me instant feedback. So it's kind of hard making a song and not showing it to anybody.
So do you just, are you just gonna make like a cachet of songs and just put them up, or maybe write a specific song to be put out into the world?
Well, the album that I'm writing now, all the songs are kind of gonna coincide with each other. So if I make a song to put online for free, it'd be Purposely or something, or a cover.
I gotcha. Let's hear another song.
Okay. I can only seem to catch my breathing whenever I'm up away. I can only seem to fake my feelings whenever I make mistakes. Isn't it strange? Seem to be myself whenever no one's around. I only pretend to know you well, so I never make a sound. Isn't it strange?
Isn't
What was that one called?
It was called Trinity.
Oh, what's it about?
It is about. Have you ever watched the show Dexter?
No.
Okay.
But I'm sure there's a lot of people that think you have.
It is a song that I wrote in the point of view of Dexter Morgan. So.
Oh, that's awesome.
Because I thought it would be an interesting thing to write about. So.
How do you normally, I mean, that's an interesting way, but before we spoke, I think what earlier in the show, you just wanted to create a wall of sound.
Sorry.
A wall of sound with your computer, which I feel that you've done on a number of songs. And so what is the, do you feel like the writing process has now evolved since you started the project?
Yeah, I wanted to do I tried to replicate the wall of sound as best as I could digitally for a song that I had called About You.
Which is what we played up in the show.
And I don't know, I guess it's changed somewhat. I wanted to see if I could create that for that song. And then for other songs, I want to see if I could do something else. Kind of depends on what song it is, I guess.
You said that the album is going to be a cohesive album. What is the, or can you share the theme or what the focus is?
I'm not sure if there's a specific focus. I just want all the songs to kind of blend well with each other. And so if you listen to one song, you kind of hear the next song that's going to come before the first one actually ends. Kind of just like something that is, as a whole, I want people to want to listen to the whole album as opposed to just remembering one song or something.
Gotcha. So upcoming shows, where can people come see you?
I have no upcoming shows at the moment. This is the first time probably in a year that I don't have a show that I'm playing next. But I'm kind of just focusing on writing right now.
All right, if people want to find you on Twitter, online, hear your music, the free songs, where can they go?
They can go... The song that I just played is going to be on the album.
Oh,
yeah,
awesome.
So you can't hear it anywhere online. Yeah, and you can go to thecomputermagic.com. On Twitter, I'm ZDanz. ZDanz. And we're on MySpace and stuff. You just Google Computer Magic.
So. Your SoundCloud page pretty much has everything too, right?
Yes, yeah, my SoundCloud page is everything.
Well, I want to thank you for joining us on the show.
Yeah, no problem.
We're going to hear one more song from Computer Magic. We are off next week, as both Terry and I will be down in Austin for a fun fest. And then we will be back on the 14th with Mark Vetri and Daedalus, both playing live on the show. Thank you so much for listening to Snacking Tunes, and we'll be back in a couple weeks.
Telephone me to a galaxy I've never been before. Oh, last resort is company. What do I need people for? Oh.
believer, but they know it and they don't say a thing.